Welcome to the Humans and AI Podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Okay. Hi, Steve. How are you? I appreciate you joining the Humans and AI Podcast. I'm very excited to talk about your company, Memrise, because I found a very interesting company that you guys are building very interesting language learning platform. So yeah, let's start then. So Steve, before going to all those, to the main topic, I would like to get to know you a bit more, your background and how you start the journey to become the CEO at Memrise. So could you take me into your early journey from tax, chat, and EY to becoming the CEO now from Memrise?
Sure. So as you said, I was the CEO of a company called TaxChat some time ago, which is a two-sided marketplace pairing tax filers with tax preparers, much like Uber pairs riders and drivers. And I sold that to EY. And while I was at EY during a one-year earnout, I got a chance to work with some of the smartest PhDs in the AI realm, and we did many things together, including put 400 to 500 man hours of monthly tax classification work into a computer run that can be done in 15 minutes and done more accurately, which was a pretty incredible thing to accomplish. And you can imagine what it does for profitability. And that was the first time I really made contact with what is possible in the AI machine learning realm. And since then, I've managed near 100 apps by managing a portfolio of apps at Apollon in the IAC empire. So fitness apps and utility apps like VPN apps and casual game apps like Drawing and weather apps and you name it. And that eventually led me to Memrise, where I became CEO in 2021.
Okay, so the name is Memrise, because I say Memrise instead of Memrise. Okay, cool. Yeah. That's very interesting. Like, you created so many apps. What was, like, why does this kind of motivation, or there's any reason that you built so many apps? Just curious about that.
To be clear, when I was at Apollon, I was coming in to take over a portfolio of mobile apps that had been created by a Belarusian company that IAC in America purchased. And after they had purchased this portfolio of apps and the founders moved on, the revenue started sliding. So I came in not to create these apps, but to take over this portfolio of apps and turn them from revenue sliding to revenue growing in the period of time that I was there. It was less of a creation task and more of a management task on a portfolio of apps that were already in existence.
Okay, so in a world where a real-time translation is becoming more and more common, what are the benefits to learning a language right now, in your opinion?
Yeah, good question. I think that the real-world translation capabilities are going to continue to improve, and they're going to be incredibly useful. I don't know if you have seen, there was one video I saw about a ticket booth in a train station in Japan, where there was a clear glass screen separating the booth attendant, and the person could speak their native language and it would instantly translate into Japanese for the booth attendant and vice versa. And it was an incredible example of real-time translation that made that transaction go incredibly well. But that doesn't do anything to help the person on the other side of the glass connect with the person in the booth. And that matters. If it didn't matter, then we wouldn't see this incredible surge of people learning Korean because of BTS and Blackpink and Parasite and Squid Games, right? People get a connection to a culture and they say, "Ooh, I want to learn more about that culture." Right? When people go traveling to France or Germany or Spain or Japan, right, they want to connect with the people. And there's not going to be a lot of locals in Paris that are going to wander around with a universal translator waiting to see if they can talk to the American. They'll just say, oh, I'm going to talk English to you. So it's about connection. And that part doesn't go away. And that's why people will continue to want to learn a language.
Good answer. I like it. Actually, in talking about Korea, Japan, I was talking actually, not talking, I was last year in China. And I got that problem with the translation because I was not able to speak Chinese. So it was a bit hard for me. Like I had to use basically a ChatGPT because that doesn't work, the translation and everything. And it was actually very interesting how they use it as well. They just got a translation app there and they just talk. So they talk with everybody. It's very interesting because it's the only way to talk to them because they don't speak English either. So it's very interesting. For example, yeah, so I kind of see what you mean. So how does AI make learning language easier for students?
There's a lot of ways it does that. But at the end of the day, the promise of AI in education everywhere, not just language learning, is hyper-personalization. Every single student, every user, every customer of ours, they have different skills and they have different life experiences and they are good at some things and not good at other things. And the fundamental promise is to allow this technology to meet users where they are. A good example in our world is that whenever we ask somebody why they're using Memrise, they immediately say to learn a language. But then when we ask them why they want to learn a language, that's when the answers vary. Some people are traveling and they don't want to get the English menu in France. Some people have married into an Italian family and they want to talk to their new mother-in-law. Some people have gotten a job at an international company and they want to connect with their workers. Sometimes a cabbie in Turkey wants to speak a few more phrases of English because they make better tips when they learn those phrases. So everybody's why is different. And that allows us to change what we teach people based on their why. If you're traveling, we give you one set of words. If you're connecting with your mother-in-law who loves knitting, we give you a different set of words. If you are a cabbie in Turkey that is just trying to make small talk, we give you yet another set of words. And then once you have those words and we take you through all the learning features that are available, those people that pronounce words perfectly the first time, we don't need to give them pronunciation drills. But those people who botch pronunciation so as to not be understood, then we can help them pronounce. And those people who can't remember the gender of the nouns in French or Spanish, we can help them do that, whereas some people have it the first time. So it's personalization is the promise.
Okay. I understood that Memrise implement more AI than other platforms in the same field, but you guys committing to be on human created content and more on native speakers. So how do you guys do that?
Yeah, it does seem like a contradiction for sure. But there are many ways that we do it, and probably the easiest and best way to explain it is what we did for helping people train their ear with content that matters to them and their goal. Up until just recently, the only way that language was taught was with curriculum, because teachers were marching kids to the same test, and language learning apps like us had to make the video that we made in order to help people train their ear. And that meant we had to know what words people already knew. So we had to teach them the words in the same order. And that left us making weird videos like the green turtles on the red sweater on the blue chair. And they're not very entertaining to boot. But now with AI, what we can do is we can let people learn words in any order they want. And then we can go to this infinite source of video that is called YouTube and suck in videos, break them down by their words and phrases, so we can filter them by the words and phrases. And so if you have 500 words that you know, they're going to be different than 500 words that somebody else knows. We can filter videos differently for you as opposed to somebody else. And we can have so many videos that if you like sports videos, you watch sports videos. And if you like music videos, you watch music videos. That is where We have used the power of this technology to essentially scale the real-world human-made content that we're doom scrolling all day anyway, and that is how we walk that line.
Great. How was the process for your team to embrace the AI?
That's a good one. It has come in fits and starts, for sure. The whole company didn't instantly see the wisdom and the potential and jump right on in. And so we had to try to get the company to embrace this technology and bring it into our product and our ways of working. And I made one silly mistake, given what we believe here at Memrise, right? Here at Memrise, we believe the best way to learn a language is to go in country and survive. Not sit down with a big book and learn all the words, right? Just go in country and survive. Yet, knowing that, I started the process by saying, okay, let's get some courses and teach people what RAG pipelines are like and so on. And that didn't work at all. And it's not surprising. But what did work is we got people set up with middle layer tools like Cursor and Replit and Windsurf. And we got them set up in something that's easy for programmers to do to set up an IDE, but hard for linguists and localization experts to do. But we got them set up and then we said, go build something. And they said, go build what? And we're like, build anything you want to. But how? And we said, just go talk to the thing, right? And so they started talking to the thing and something amazing happened. People that weren't programmers, but were linguists and localization experts and loved language, they started making features that were amazing and deploying it out to the web. And then when they had a little taste of success, they made more stuff. And then when the engineers who were slower to adopt this thing, saw what non-engineers were doing, they're like, oh, maybe there's a there. And eventually we got to where we are now, where we are fully integrating this technology into our ways of working and how we produce our product.
Yeah, so I also read that you guys have an award winning in the language learning system with over 50 million users. How challenging was to get to that point? And what was the lessons that you've learned from scaling to reach over 50 million users? Because it's a lot.
Yeah, so we have had 80 million users register to use Memrise over time. And we currently have between 15 and 18,000 new users registering every day. So the challenge is actually how do we personalize for everybody when they're coming in at that pace and at that scale? When you are teaching a curriculum, when you're teaching the same thing to everybody, when your next 100,000 French users come in and they all learn bonjour and then ça va and then merci, it's actually a little bit easier to do. You're just doing the same thing for everybody. But when there is the personalization, it's harder. So what we have done is we've implemented a very simple structure. We atomized our dictionaries, meaning all the words and phrases in our dictionaries aren't part of a curriculum. They aren't taught in a certain order. Each word or phrase can exist on its own. And then we allow people to scoop up the words that they want to learn for their goal. And then we take them through all of the exercises we know that one needs to do, the exercises that one would do if they're living in country and surviving. And then we see how they perform on those. And we feed that back into the system. And if you're performing poorly on pronunciation, we'll give you more pronunciation work. And if you're performing poorly on sentence structure, we'll give you some sentence structure work. And if you just don't use words that are important, we'll help you memorize more words that help you convey what's going on. So it's the personalization that is the tricky part, but a simple architectural decision of atomizing the dictionary lets us succeed in an AI-driven world.
Great. Well, the lessons that you, so, but what was the lessons that you've learned from it?
I think the key lessons are perhaps this, and what I'm about to give you is a framework that will work for absolutely any customer-facing company who is trying to get their domain expertise into the hands of their users. And that this framework is called prompt, context, coordination. So in this AI world, the prompt is the agent, the thing that is good at something. So we have an agent that's good at pronunciation, and we have an agent that's good at building sentences, and we have an agent that's good at explaining grammar, and we have an agent that's good at picking videos, and we have an agent that's good at having conversations. So that we get that, but that agent is now just an unpersonalized agent. And that's where you come to the second part of the framework, which is context. So what things are you good at? What things do you want to accomplish? And from there, we then take the thing, that context, and feed it to the agent. So if you are mispronouncing a word, we feed it to the agent and say, don't just give pronunciation practice, give pronunciation practice for this word. And that's where the context comes in. And then it's coordination. How do you take all these agents that do different parts of the puzzle and make sure that they stay coordinated in a way that can feed each other information and keep the journey going? And so that's what we learned, which is prompt, context, and coordination. And it can be applied to nutrition or fitness or sales training as much as it can be applied to language learning.
Thanks, Steve. Very interesting. Actually, I found it very interesting. In your perspective, what most startups are getting wrong about AI?
Another good question. I think that the biggest one is that there is so much talk and chatter and ink being spilled about the specifications of all of the large language models, the foundational layer, which ones are faster, which ones are cheaper. DeepSeek is this today, and Anthropic is that tomorrow, and so on. That people start focusing on that or the middleware layer, right? Windsurf is better than Cursor, is better than Replit, is better than the next IDE that to come around. And that's focusing on the wrong thing. Certainly in a world where you're providing value to a client or a customer at the end, right? What you need to focus on is the job to be done, and which of those models and which of those tools helps you get the job done. But I've seen too many people focus on, okay, we're going to choose to do a deal with OpenAI or Anthropic, and that's going to be our provider of models. And then we're going to absolutely use this IDE, and that is not helpful. Any person in our company can use any IDE they want to do their programming because the tool doesn't matter. The end result, the job to be done, which we're all aligned on, does matter.
That's a good book, Jobs to Be Done, actually. I don't know if you know some book, but yeah, it's a book.
Oh, yeah, no, I know that the book one. We are big fans of it here at Memrise.
Okay. What do you think that ordinary people like who don't have experience with AI, but they just, for example, someone who works in a coffee shop, okay, and wants to search something about AI or use AI, not even search. What do you think that they should, which regulations we should have to avoid to have harmful content? Because there are people who use AI, like for example, ChatGPT as therapy. And yesterday, I just saw an article about someone kill himself. I think it was a guy. Yeah, kill himself because what AI said. How can we, like, in your perspective, how can we protect that from people to be, I mean, this AI that sometimes can be harmful as well. So how, in your opinion, how can we protect that thing?
Yeah, you're cracking open a big problem right there. I will tell you that I don't necessarily have all the answers. I do know that we can't physically put in enough guardrails in order to protect folks in these various different situations, particularly edge cases where somebody goes so far down the rabbit hole as to not come back, in the example you just gave. But I do know that the answer is probably the same as it has always been, which is getting people mentally and intellectually robust, right? Getting people to be able to not only not be crushed by whatever comes through the AI, but also not be crushed by whatever bullying comes through the social channels that, are out there, or anything else that life throws at you. In terms of, say, talking to parents raising kids, right? The solution is to get the kid to be mentally, emotionally robust, not try to play whack-a-mole with every single large language model that's out there. There's also, of course, the issue of people who have bad intent with these tools. And there again, the issue is how do you get to the people with bad intent, right? Because people with bad intent can do awful things with everyday things like airplanes and kitchen knives.
Great. Thanks, Steve. I know that I was it's just some kind of thought that I came up with when we were talking about. I found it interesting to discuss a little bit. Steve, which competitor keeps you focused on your goal and mission with Memorize?
I actually have a saying that I use here at Memorize very often. And the saying is, the bike goes where you look. And that's a reference to bicycling or motorcycle riding, where the bicycle or the motorcycle literally goes to where you look. So if you're making a turn and you see a pothole and you want to avoid that pothole, don't look at it. Because if you stare at that pothole, you're going to hit it. And for that reason, I say, don't look at our competitors. Our competitors are not building anything that we want to build. If you stare at Duolingo, we won't have a native speaker app. If you stare at Duolingo, we won't have their customers coming to us when they're frustrated and want to actually speak the language. We'll just be another Duolingo. So I tell them, the bike goes where you look. Don't look at other competitors. Let's build what we believe, an app that helps people speak in the language that they want to speak for the reason they want to speak to others. And that's how we focus ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's very wise because in this world that there's everything is competition sometimes. I feel like most of the people get a bit, myself included, kind of lost sometimes. I'm in the yeah, in everyday things, and there's every day there's a new app, a new startup, a new every day. It's kind of incredible. It's incredible. So I admire your focus, to be honest with you. Just focus on your goal and that's it. That's actually, yeah, that's how you focus. That's great. So, Steve, you spoke about impact over profit, right? Could you share a moment when you felt Memorize truly made a difference for a guest or, I guess, a client?
In fact, we do this every day and we can see it in our numbers. There is a reality about language learning that you constantly have to be placing yourself just at the edge of comfort, right? You learn a language by engaging with a language where you know some of the words, but not all of the words. And you have to figure out what else is going on. That's how we learned our first language. And that's how polyglots learn multiple languages. You always got to be at just at the edge of comfort. But being just at the edge of comfort is not the absolute best way to maintain retention and engagement numbers. However, maintaining retention and engagement numbers is a pretty darn good way to maximize profit. We have seen Louis von Ahn, who's the CEO of Duolingo and has made an incredible product for a great reason and has an incredible team. And I have nothing but respect for him. But he has made a decision. When asked the question, if you have to choose between engagement and efficacy, what do you choose? And he said, it's an easy answer. It's always engagement. And he follows up with the very true statement that without engagement, you can't be efficacious. And that is true. But if you don't get people just to the edge of their comfort zone, they're not going to get to the goal that they want, certainly not in the time frame that they want to. So every day we're pushing people into a mode where they're just a little bit uncomfortable, and we're hurting our engagement and retention metrics just a little bit. And that ripples through to our profits just a little bit. But the goal is to get people conversing with others. And so we take that hit.
Great. So as far as my understanding, the CEO of Duolingo and you are friends. At least you cannot get along. That's great. Maybe it's a big war, friends, but
I've never met him, but I do have great respect for what he has built, and I do admire what he's done with Duolingo and Recaptcha before that. He is an impressive individual, but I've never met him.
Okay. So then I misunderstood. Great. So Steve, let's kind of think a little bit about the future. Five years from now, what excites you most about AI reshaping language learning in 5 years?
I think this applies to all learning for sure. And it is that we've had a taste of how we can personalize for each individual user. And it's a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing. And the better that we're able to do it, the better that we're able to help people accomplish their objectives. And so I really do see a world where AI is going to get ever more sophisticated, and people with true domain expertise are going to go through that prompt, context, coordination framework that I talked about earlier and deliver experiences that help people just learn more, right? We will have better STEM scores from kids in school because the AI can meet every kid where they are. And we will have more people that are able to speak languages, even if they're spinning up a language just for the purpose of going to France next month and then forgetting it after that. That is what excites me. We can make human potential more effective and more creative and leverage it with these tools.
Great. How many languages do you speak, Steve?
I'm one of those ones that spins up and spins down, right? So when I was running Apollon, which was a company that had its entire workforce in Belarus, right? My Russian got to conversational levels and I can certainly order beer and have chats with people, but now I can barely remember any of it. I've done similar things with French and German when I was engaging in those areas, but it is all about what do you use, but you can spin up much faster than you think you can.
Yeah, 100%. I think practice makes the things happen, right? So
practice, yeah, for sure.
You need to practice at least after, yeah. So Steve, which advice would you give to, for example, a young entrepreneur who would like to, even though that there's so much about learning language apps, but or platforms, but what would you advise them?
Advise them as far as learning a language or as far as getting involved with AI?
Like building, like young entrepreneur, building a learning language, like what would you advise them? Because it's pretty, there's a lot, so much competition, right? So maybe you advise them, don't do it. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't need any more competitors for Memrise here. So don't do it. It's a crowded space. Don't do it. Go choose something else. But in all seriousness, if I was advising an entrepreneur, right, there is a couple of things that has been age old wisdom that is still good today. There's a gentleman by the name of Kevin Kelly that talks about 1,000 true fans, right? If you get 1,000 true fans who are people that are just, they'll pay you $100 a year for whatever it is you produce because they're a true fan, right? Well, that's $100,000 a year salary. And if you can get 2,000, well, you can do the math and so on. Building something that people really love is very valuable. And you can do it today with these tools in a way that you never could before. And you don't have to be a programmer. 5 years ago, you had to go find a CTO partner that knew what was going on in order to build something. Now you can spin something up and give it a try and then tweak it and tweak it until you get your 1,000 true fans. And that is something that's available to everybody now. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And so just combine these tools with age-old wisdom and build something that people love. And once you do that, then you worry about scaling it.
Thanks very much, Steve. It's been great conversation. I appreciate everything that you share with me. I found it very interesting. Yeah, this is the language war is a big thing. Yeah, I appreciate it so much. And thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human. One story at a time. See you in the next episode.